I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran, and this is Radio versus the Martians. Oh, the Civil War.
But yeah, that's a big part of a lot of those sort of period stories that we want characters to have a modernist, anachronistic view of things.
Yeah.
That, and sometimes, if you, like for instance, you play a game that takes place in the 1930s, you want to pretend that only bad people are racist. Where yeah. That badness is everywhere.
Yeah, that is probably the single biggest, one of the biggest pet peeves that I have about period pieces is the anachronism. Like, whether or not, I mean, the sort of aesthetic anachronisms, I think, are one of the things that will just bother you a little bit, where someone is speaking with an accent or is using words that can't possibly, like, I can't tell you how many times that I ever heard the phrase cut to the chase being used in a piece of fiction that takes place before the end of the 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
Cut to the chase has to do with movies.
Yes.
So when you hear a character do it and they're supposed to be like in, you know, at the beginning of the 19th century, it doesn't make any sense. Like, but there's also the bit too where, yeah, you, people who are, who are supposed to be the heroes are far too benevolent and far too worldly than they probably should be, and because they're supposed to be our paragons for 21st century eyes.
Not bigoted, too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the big part of how this stuff tends to go, is that as you get social progress, more and more that stuff gets left over with sort of the ugly, mean bigot types.
Yeah.
And it becomes less of sort of this ambient bigotry that sort of pervades everything.
Yes.
Where, I mean, everyone in the 1930s, with few exceptions, was racist, and it probably wasn't the cop you're playing. You know, that wasn't that one guy who seems to be not homophobic, even though people in the 1980s on every end of the political spectrum was pretty much homophobic at that point.
Yeah.
You know, you're still going through those growing pains, but you still want somebody who is a character in the 30s to act like they live in the 2010s, and that it's everyone else that's the problem. Unless this character's a time traveler, this just isn't going to happen. But again, you want to, at the same time, you have that other pull, which is that you want a modern audience to like your main character.
See, that's the only way you can have it where it works is like Quantum Leap.
Yeah.
Because he is playing those characters and he is an enlightened 21st century citizen, right? And so but I actually love that part about the many things that make that formula work is that he can be the one trying to impress upon people that their worldviews are kind of small and that they will be proven wrong, and mostly always they just don't get it, you know? And I think that's good, because that makes for a more honest look back at the past when you can do it through that perspective than the one where you just kind of like, oh, we'll just write a character who is an you know, a paragon that could not have existed at that time.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing I think they do really well with Hex, which is that he's more progressive than the people around him, but he's by no means woke, as the kids call it, because I think there's an issue where he does get hired by women suffragists in Wyoming to protect them because the governor is basically threatening them with violence in a campaign of brutality to dissuade them from calling for this vote for women to get the right to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And Hex gets hired by them, and he just doesn't give a shit. He has no opposition to women getting the right to vote, but he doesn't understand what the fucking point of voting is. Their money spent as good as anyone else's.
Right.
And I think there's a time travel issue of the most recent volume of All-Star Western, where Jonah Hex is thrown into the modern day. And I think one of the first people that he encounters in an alleyway is a black superhero. Is like, whoa, that's really not a good thing to wear. But then later, when I think somebody's talking to him about how things have changed, he doesn't really think we've gotten that much better and that we pat ourselves on the back a bit too much, that people still murder each other, that the guns have gotten a lot better, but the people haven't. And I think they bring up gay rights to him, and he just doesn't really understand. He doesn't understand the opposition, where he's not that, but he's not going to join your march.
Right.
But he just doesn't understand what the fucking point is. Just leave people the fuck alone is kind of his attitude. But he doesn't really espouse a modern sort of sense. He's like, I don't get what that's all about, but I don't care.
I love that they can, I mean, I know we talk about this. We've talked about this many times that, Punisher as a character within the Marvel universe is someone who doesn't belong all that next to superheroes. We were talking about Hellblazer, because we've made this point. The John Constantine breaks the DC universe because he's something totally different. Jonah Hex doesn't necessarily break the universe. It's just that Jonah Hex's world is pretty mundane, you know?
It's pretty incompatible.
Yeah.
That Hex doesn't really get a lot of supernatural elements in his stories. They seem to be straight spaghetti westerns, with few exceptions. Like, there are characters like El Diablo and others that show up, but it's always this brief kind of encounter with the supernatural.
It's like magic the way that Gandalf does magic, right?
Yeah.
Whereas, like, there's magic there, but it isn't giant plumes of lightning coming out of his fingers.
And then there's the same thing with Hex's Vertigo series that they did in the 90s, where it's kind of weird supernatural westerns, but it doesn't happen very often. The lion's share of Hex stories are pretty standard Western stories that don't really fit into the sort of story that you have. I mean, I guess The Punisher is a good example, too, and John Constantine, which is you can take these characters and throw them into a Justice League story and give them a guest appearance, but they're going to be kind of changed in some way, that Jonah Hex isn't going to be allowed to kill people. The Punisher is sort of on his best behavior most of the time, or he's thwarted when he's trying to do the thing that he does in his own title, if he's in the presence of, like, Daredevil or Spider-Man. So they want them to team up and have that tension, but ultimately they're not allowed to be right if they try to do the thing that they do and are lauded for in their own title. With Constantine, it's a little bit weird because it's almost like he drifted away from the DC universe, that Vertigo wasn't its own imprint for years. I think the first 5 or so years that Hellblazer came out, and the same thing with the early 80s created the Alan Moore Swamp Thing, and these are also kind of spawned out of that.
Because Swamp Thing shows up in Constantine, doesn't it?
Yeah, he's a character. So he's a spinoff of a Swamp Thing.
Right.
So you have these characters who sort of created their own little sub-universe, and every so often, like, you know, in the first couple issues of Sandman, you have an appearance by Justice League International, but they disappear pretty quickly. You know, they drifted apart, and they just became such different animals that they don't really fit together, so they just stopped acknowledging each other after a while.
Which is what you would hope they would do, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to destroy the... I mean, this is maybe one thing that the DC superhero movies are not able to figure out, is that you don't want to just break the toys for purposes of having to sort of fit them into this one. They should have a life of their own. You should let the story breathe the way it is, instead of needing for them to all sort of fit into the continuity. And we're back to the continuity discussion here, but it's nice. It's nice, and that's why these things, when we, you know, we'll talk about Sandman and we'll give it the praise endlessly, is, well, it's just this one of these books that could have just become a slave to whatever universe event that DC wanted to do that year and insert shit in there. But no, they have a certain point in time, they're just like, well, these stories are something different.
They realized after a while they had a different audience.
Yeah.
That the people who were reading the Vertigo books before they made Vertigo its own thing in 1993, they realized that the audience wasn't really there. So it didn't make sense to pull Swamp Thing into, like, Invasion or Armageddon 2001.
Bloodlines.
Or Eclipso, Bloodlines, all these kind of, you know, these events that they were putting out. It just didn't make sense because those stories were kind of incompatible. John Constantine, too, sort of deals with a different kind of magic and a different kind of world, that it's much more grounded. But the other thing with Constantine that makes it incompatible is that he ages in real time, which is something you don't get with Batman. Batman is always going to be, you know, 30-something years old.
And is that how old he is? I always thought he was a little older. I thought he was in his 40s.
I don't know. Batman, it depends on where you sort of put him, but Batman is always in that sort of in the prime of his life place.
Mm-hmm.
Same with Superman. Unless you're doing a story like The Dark Knight Returns where you make him old.
Right.
But you're never going to age him up to that, because eventually you're going to have to replace him.
Oh man, I have to as an aside, because we just mentioned Dark Knight Returns. I was at the comic book store last time, and there was a hardcover volume of Dark Knight. It's either Dark Knight Returns or a collection of stuff, because I think other writers are doing stuff in this universe now, right?
Mm-hmm.
The subtitle for this book was Master Race.
Oh, and yeah, Dark Knight 3.
And I was like, is he not even being subtle anymore? Is this Frank Miller just drinking Drano right now? I don't really know.
I haven't read any of Dark Knight 3. I just know that it's co-written by Brian Azzarello, who did co-written or ghostwritten. I'm not really sure what the relationship is. If Frank Miller sort of George Lucas'd it, where he just gives you an idea of what he wants to do, and then other people write in that universe,
he has all the storyboards up on that are masterfully designed up on it, and he's scrubbing out with a pen, saying "real, not real, real, not real." That's the way George Lucas works.
But yeah,
everyone else imagined it for him, and then he just crosses it out if he doesn't like it.
But yeah, the sort of the alternative with Constantine though is that in the course of that series, they actually acknowledge what year it is when the book is coming out, which is crazy, because John Constantine is a guy who was a teenager in the 1970s and got involved in the punk scene.
Right.
That he sort of, in his prime, in his 30s, during sort of the Thatcher era.
Yeah.
And you see him get older. That you actually see his 40th and 50th birthday over the course of this comic.
It's awesome.
And that's something that they don't do in other places, but also the fact that he's not like a Harry Potter, Doctor Strange type wizard, who again, like say, does the big special effects magic. He usually bullshits people and usually defeats these massively powerful cosmic beings by just being really smart and being a bastard. Where he
Landos them. Right?
Yeah. He doesn't do a thing where he is able to fight somebody one-on-one in other dimensions, or, you know, shoot fire out of his hands or things like that. It's a different kind of magic. And so to have him in the same universe as, say, Dr. Fate, who is a DC Universe wizard-type character, it seems kind of odd. So even though when he does encounter characters like the Phantom Stranger and Zatanna and stuff like that, they almost feel like alternate versions of them who appear in Hellblazer, but nobody's going to mention, like, Superman. They just stop mentioning that he's a thing that exists in the main series because it just doesn't fit anymore. It doesn't feel like a universe where that sort of stuff happens. And thematically, it doesn't work. So they just kind of stop talking to each other over time. And I think that's okay. And Hex is kind of like that. Hex actually has the advantage of being in a completely different time period.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's not going to run into these people unless you do a Justice League story where he goes through time.
Well, the excuse you could make in favor of the way that sort of Jonah Hex is presented is that, you know, not everything, not like every day for every person on the planet is going to be amazing and going to have some kind of earth-shattering, universe-endangering event that happens around them that they're aware of. Like, there could just still be decades that you live in the Old West, and maybe you hear crazy stories, fairy tales, people's tall tales about something. But yeah, there could just be mundane, unsupernatural stuff happening all the time, because the universe allows for that level of boring action, that level of boring consequence.
I mean, if the Green Lantern Corps, you know, intergalactic peacekeeping force with essentially magic rings, they're not magic, but they're functionally magic rings. They've been around for a billion years, which means that there are Green Lanterns fighting aliens in that universe at the same time that Jonah Hex is having adventures that are gritty and realistic. That's weird. It's sort of thing where you kind of have to intentionally put blinders on.
It's the same thing like reading a Punisher book. You're reading some of the earlier when he got his own title, and it's just sort of like, well, it just looks like a weird, gritty sort of cop story, or sort of a vigilante thriller, and you don't really, you can go whole issues without even mention of there being superheroes.
Yeah, it's more like if he's going to meet superheroes, and I think this is true of both of Constantine, it's true of Jonah Hex, and it's true of the Punisher, which is that if they're going to meet superheroes, I want them to meet in the superheroes book, not in the Punisher's book.
True.
Because they're going to be behaving functionally different. They won't be allowed to do everything that they do there. But the hero is allowed to be right in their own book, where if you have the Punisher's book, where we're supposed to cheer him on when he's just killing people, or where Jonah Hex throws a hatchet and hits a dude in the brain pan, or, you know, some of the bastardly stuff that John Constantine does, that stuff is not going to be looked on well by Superman or Daredevil or any of those people. And if it's in his own book, you ultimately want the main character of your book to be right. So it makes them look stupid. And you don't want your characters to look stupid, which is why I think when Garth Ennis took over writing The Punisher throughout much of the 2000s, that he kind of seems to be existing in his own little pocket universe. That the Punisher in Garth Ennis's run, like John Constantine, has also aged. That he's a guy in his 50s who did fight in Vietnam and has been doing this stuff for decades and seems to be the only superhero character in his title. And that age has only made him that much more grizzled, and the added levels of leathery callousness
scar
has just
tissue.
Made him, it's just made him tougher. That he's just like a it's just kind of made him bulletproof and mean.
That's why I love Punisher Max. I thought Max was really, really good. It was amazingly good.
And it's great. And just sort of cuts him loose from that sort of stuff. And sometimes you kind of have to give them their own free reign in their own little universe, because then you don't have to worry about the standard, you know, universe ambient morality that they normally get. But also the fact that they're a lot of the much more high level, crazy, over the top, supernatural, high tech superhero-y stuff kind of gets in the way of what you're doing. So it's like, why wouldn't Jonah Hex keep a laser gun or something? Or think about the technology, the Iron Man-type technology that was available in the universe of The Punisher that he doesn't use. He uses standard guns that any person could get, you know, in the military. He's not using, like, it's like a quantum, you know, laser pistol, or he's not, you know, it's weird if that stuff sort of comes out there. If you make him really sci-fi, it kind of gets away from the gritty urban thing that he basically has weapons that he can easily take off of the bodies of all these, like, mobsters and organized crime guys and terrorists that he kills.
I'm very much looking forward to the John Bernthal Punisher series. Singleton Punisher series. In a way that I just have no, like, I didn't finish Jessica Jones or anything, and I actually, to my shame, I should actually watch Luke Cage, because I think I've heard from you and from other people that the first few episodes of it are really, really good.
Yeah.
Really well done. However, The Punisher exists as something that would be like, well, this seems perfect for what you would want to put on Netflix. This seems absolutely perfect.
It's good to cut him loose and give him his own free reign where he doesn't have another character shaking their finger at him and telling him, no, bad Punisher.
Right.
Just giving him that sort of freedom where he can exist in a world that props up the sort of person that he is. Again, the villains are awful, awful people who, again, like we said in the Vigilante episode, they have to be so bad that they deserve the sort of shit that the hero is going to give them. And the audience has to be sort of okay with it. So when somebody's like truly awful, like in John Wick,
That
puppy is enough to make most people in the audience go, you know what, I don't normally want to see this kind of violence, but those people really deserve it.
Did you happen to see Wind River on your binge this year?
I haven't.
Wind River, okay. There's some, Bernthal's in that as a, he doesn't have a, he's not top billed. But there's definitely those moments, there's very satisfying moments of payback, and that's exactly what you want in a Punisher film, is like to get to the point where you're really on the edge of your seat, you're really white knuckling it, and of course you know that the bad guys are going to get fucked, you just don't know how many of the good guys are going to fare, but you really, really, really feels good when they just get theirs. Really feels good,
and that's what you gotta get.
I feel like I just had this moment, I thought the same thing that I felt about when they redid Casino Royale with Daniel Craig. A James Bond movie that had really been done in a parody form before, and they curled back around because they hadn't done it in sort of the current mode of the James Bond movies. I felt then that they should have taken all of the problems that they were having moving James Bond into a post Iron Curtain era could have been fixed if they just had made it a period piece, if they just made it in the 60s and had all of the gadgets be hilariously anachronistic for a 1960s show. That would have been amazing. And I just had that same thought about Punisher, is I would have been great if this Punisher would be like 1982 in New York City.
Yeah, you could totally go that route.
Like a super, super scummy, like taxi driver style, like disgusting.
The Warriors.
Yeah, disgusting, dirty, full of crime, full of prostitution.
Neon and porno theaters and alleyways.
Cities disintegrating. Because it's a little bit difficult to sell that as much. Even like with the Netflix Daredevil, Hell's Kitchen isn't like it was anymore. It doesn't feel like you would like a pre-Ed Koch sort of New York City where the city is dying and people and wealthy people are moving out of the city because they're sick and tired of the crime and the degradation. In the current New York, I mean, it's like one of the wealthiest places in the entire world, and the property values are all up. So it's a little bit
difficult.
Those kind
of places almost are mythical. It's like Gotham City.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gotham City doesn't... Yeah. I don't know. It's just weird.
The mean streets of New York City.
Where there's kind of this mythical New York, and it's always kind of the worst parts of Times Square. Again, you made the taxi driver reference, but it's exactly that. The sort of... the world outside of Travis Bickle's car...
Yeah.
where it's just, every time you look out anywhere, it's always a pimp screaming at some poor woman and some person like having a bottle broken over their head or, you know, just kind of crazy stuff happening where all you really need is some mentally unhinged Vietnam vet to go fix this for you.
Yeah. It also strikes me that, there's a lot to be said about the... I've just been watching the new Vietnam War documentary from Ken Burns, which it's amazing. It's probably his best one by far, just because of how complex it is. But I love the idea that he sort of explores, and it makes sense for the Punisher character, is that Vietnam was such a polarizing thing in society that it was a thing where veterans, they bore the scars of that experience, but they didn't talk about it ever to anyone. And that's also, that stoicism is definitely part and parcel of his experience, of Frank Castle's experience of not only losing his family from mob violence, but also being in the meat grinder of Vietnam and coming back like, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions of other guys, and who were just so scarred by it that they just can't deal with it, you know?
And that's the kind of thing that I think I kind of like in more modern interpretations of Frank Castle, which is that he was fundamentally changed by the war, and that him trying to be a family man and a dad was him acting against type, and that there's this pressure there, and that the murder of his family was just this release valve.
Yeah.
That on some level he feels this great deal of shame for. Have you ever read the Punisher Max story that Jason Aaron wrote?
I don't know. You'll have to remember.
This is the one. It's sort of a self-contained universe where they kind of revealed this sort of new version of how his family died, which is that it was this growing pressure that he was a really efficient killer in Vietnam, and he knew how to do this. He knew how to be a soldier, but he was just so utterly changed by the violence that he saw and the violence he partook in that he just couldn't go back to being a normal person, and there's this great pressure, and that a lot of his guilt comes out of the fact that right before his wife gets shot in the head in the crossfire of this mob battle, the last thing he says to her is that he's leaving her.
Oh, wow. Oh.
And that's the last place he sees his family, is that I need to get out. I can't be this. And on one level, it's sort of like he's been freed. And he feels this tremendous guilt from that, that he just hates them. But at the same time, this is the only thing he knows how to do or he feels normal. And but the idea of him having that guilt because that's the last thing she heard him say before he died is just so fucked up.
Yeah.
But I kind of love in that series that he really isn't he's kind of the Jason Voorhees character.
Yeah.
But he's also not a good guy in that sense. It's just the people that he's killing are bad guys.
Yep.
There's just something sort of ugly, and I would definitely recommend it if people can get the Jason Aaron, Steve Dillon, the artist who did Preacher and did a lot of Punisher stuff with Garth Ennis. That run is really good, and it's only 25 something issues long and actually has a definitive ending where it feels like this is the epic. There's no other superheroes in this world aside from, like, I think Elektra, Kingpin, Bullseye, a couple of those characters show up. But they're different versions.
Not the kind of crazy ones that fly on a gleaming surfboard and shoot lasers out of their eyes.
No, it's a much more grounded version of the Marvel Universe. Yeah. Like, Spider-Man doesn't show up in this.
Right.
And this is a version of him where he's been the Punisher since the 70s, and he's really old, and he's really mean, and it's kind of great. There's an alternate version of the Kingpin. I don't want to spoil the big thing with him, but it's actually one of the most unique, interesting ways to reimagine that character that I've seen. And I was a big fan of it. It's hideously fucked up. And if you're not a fan of graphic violence, you probably won't enjoy it. But if you like graphic violence and dark brutery, that's really well done. It's great.
Nice. Radio vs. the Martians is hosted by Mike Gillis and Casey Doran. This podcast is recorded in beautiful Valverde in Seattle, Washington. Our chief engineer is Casey Doran, and our editor is Mike Gillis. Our original theme music was written and performed by Todd Maxfield Matsumoto. Special thanks to Sam Mulvey, Rob Kelly, James Wetzel, Paul Rue, Tobias Panshin, Scott Kramer, Kyle Hepworth, and Dan Lombardo. Please take the time to rate and review our show on iTunes and Stitcher, and follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And if you'd like to support the show financially, please consider becoming one of our Patreon subscribers. Even just $1 a month gives you access to exclusive episodes. And you can always find us online at RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Joel Constantine is a character created by Alan Moore. He's a... Even the description's almost a cliche by now, but he's a trench-coated, chain-smoking, cynical magician who wanders the streets of London. It's hard to say these days which is more jaded, actually, the city or the character, but generally he gets into unpleasant supernatural trouble and solves the whatever the problem is, usually at the expense of one or more of his friends' lives. He's not a nice man, but a great character to write.